I'm your host, Jenny Worthington, and the following interview is from my series, Giving Animals a Voice, Bridging the Gap Between Human and Animal Consciousness.
Hi, this is Jenny Worthington. Welcome to my retreat, Giving Animals a Voice, Bridging the Gap Between Human and Animal Consciousness. I'm excited today to talk to my guest, Rose Dedan, who is an animal communicator, a Reiki master teacher, and a shamanic energy healer, and an author. And she's going to share with us some stories of her animal experiences that will bring to light the animal consciousness that she's encountered. And I am excited to bring this series to you because I think now is the time for us all to wake up and to realize that we are sharing this planet with many other conscious beings who are important to us and to the health of this world. So I want to welcome my guest, Rose Dedan. Welcome from Seattle. You are in the epicenter of this pandemic that's happening around the world, which is sort of driving us all into our homes to enjoy a program like this.
What a great intro. Thank you. Yeah, it's challenging times that we're living in. But I was reminded today by Coyote Pimpernel, who's in spirit. She's one of my animal teachers from an event called A Walk on the Wild Side or the Fright Institute. And she reminded me this morning that in every situation, there is an opportunity. And we have the opportunity, according to the messages I'm getting from the animals, to hit the reset button on how we interact with the earth, with all our relations, and with each other. So, challenging times indeed, but challenge for opportunity. And it's causing us to turn inward and discover what is really, truly important to us. All of our distractions have been stripped away. Well, maybe not all of them. We still have the internet and television. But it's a very different life right now. We've all become little hermits in our caves.
And I think there's been a lot of evidence that's come through the internet about the actual earth changes that have shown up because humans have slowed down and are not driving their cars and interfering with the natural order of things anymore. And so things like the Venice canals clearing up and the dolphins coming in and the skies clearing up and the ozone layer repairing itself, things like that. It's been pretty amazing to see how quickly the earth can repair some of the damage that we've done in such a short time of us just being slowed down and quarantined.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it really, really, it was a number of years ago that I first got this really strong message from my spirit allies that I needed to step out there and start talking about climate change, only we called it global warming at the time. And it was relatively early days, I guess you could say, for media on that. And there was a science convention presentation here in Seattle at the Burke Museum. And they brought scientists together to talk to the public about global warming. And my guides were like, push, push, you're going. Me and a bunch of scientists? Okay. So I went, I showed up, and I'm sitting there and listening to them talk about the timeline, the projections that they had at the time for, you know, how things were going and what was going to happen at this point if we did X, Y, and Z, and if we didn't do this, it was going to be that, and so on and so forth, and the salmon, and, you know, it was all scientific, but also very, very scary. And I'm trying to be as present as I can because I know there's a reason my guides have plopped me in this, you know, unusual arena. And I'm facing this portrait of Chief Seattle. And Chief Seattle is the Suquamish, Duwamish Native chief who Seattle is named after. I believe it's the only only city in the United States that's named after a Native American chief. And I literally live on the land that his people, you know, called home, where they first met the settlers. And all of a sudden, I get this message. Now, it's not Chief Seattle. I'd like to be really clear about that. I wasn't speaking to him, but the message came through, through the painting, that we had an opportunity to shift things, but we couldn't do it just through scientific approach. Yes, we needed to do physical things, make physical changes in the world. But I was told that the only way that we were going to transcend what was happening was to bring back the addition of spiritual and energetic approaches, bring back ceremony, bring back connecting with all our relations rather than being separate and working at times against them. And they're like, okay, and now go out and tell them this. And I'm like, now you want me to go up to all the scientists? They said, yeah. I was like, oh my God. So I did, I made the attempt. I at least found one person who was, you know, somewhat open to it. But I realized in talking to the people that this was not the way that I could help create change. But I got a very clear message that, you know, that what I do was needed. And I'd already, this goes back to the consciousness and the voices of the animals. I've always had a connection to animals, and I've always loved zoos. As a child, my mother told me that I knew where everybody was, and I had to go visit each and every one of them. We couldn't leave without seeing all of the animals, you know, because they would be sad. And as an adult, I still continue to go to the zoo. My mother and I were the only two in my family that were, I mean, the rest of them could not care less, but it's not their thing. And then I had become a Reiki level 2 practitioner, and I was visiting the Philadelphia Zoo. I was from that area. That was where I grew up. That was the zoo I went to. And then I moved to Massachusetts. But when I would come home every year to visit my family, I would make a trip to the zoo. So I'm at the zoo and I'm in front of the jaguar exhibit. And it's one of the more modern ones. So it had glass, you know, so really not a lot of separation between you and him. And he's pacing, really agitated. And I felt something was wrong, you know, that there was something off and I didn't know what it was. And, you know, I was newly Reiki too. So I thought, well, I can always offer Reiki because, you know, it goes to where it's needed, you know, even situations. So I asked his permission, asked if he'd like some. He said, yes. So I began, with the help of the person I was with, to send Reiki. And he stopped his pacing. And he turned and he came straight towards us, right up to the glass. And he turned around and he laid down so that his hips were right up against the glass and looking straight up his back, you know, between his ears. And yeah, I could watch all the muscles in his neck and his back relax as the Reiki energy began to, you know, bring him back to himself. And that was marvelous. But then he turned his head and he looked straight into my eyes and he held it. And his eyes were soft and open and inviting. And I'd been to the zoo for obviously years and years and years, worked with animals. They don't stare directly into your eyes. And it's not advisable that you do so because it's usually considered, you know, an act of potential aggression. You stare when you feel threatened. And so they don't do that. But his eyes were soft and he invited me in. So I'm staring deeply into his eyes and I literally like just fell into him. And he greeted me, acknowledged he had awareness of the energy, of its meaning, and he greeted me as an equal, which blew me away. I mean, the animals are aware that, you know, there were different species. For him, in that place, in that energy, he basically said, we're not different. We are the same. I am an emotional, spiritual being like you. He didn't say that. It was just all, it was all in there. And I'd always loved animals. I always knew that there was, treated them with respect, knew that there was a lot to them. But in that moment, he took me to another level. And I realized he was a master teacher. And long story short, through a series of events, I discovered that he felt frustrated. He had come to a zoo where he had potential to help teach others. But people weren't listening to him because they were only seeing him as a physical being. They weren't seeing him as the totality of what he was, an emotional, mental, physical, and spiritual being. The zoo recognizes them as ambassadors, but they don't see the full potential of that. Definitely don't recognize them as, you know, energetic or spiritual beings, although they enrich them as much as possible. You know, they make their lives as stimulating as they possibly can and as comfortable as they possibly can. And they love them, but they haven't made that leap. And I got the information that we were to, he connected with the rest of the animals at the zoo and came back with the information that they wanted a ceremony. I wasn't involved in shamanism at the time. It wasn't a blip on my horizon. And that they wanted us to do this ceremony and bring a certain number of people. And I was at this point connecting with another animal communicator was getting this information with me, for me, whatever. And she turns to me and she goes, they want to, you know, they want the land of the Philadelphia Zoo to be made sacred space. She said, do you know what that is? And I said, no, I don't have a clue. And so it was determined that we would do this ceremony. And she said, we'll invite people. We had to invite a certain number of people. And you know, she said, I'll take the animal communication part. You figure out the ceremony. And I was like, oh, thanks. So I ended up, and that's another long story, because the universe just basically said, okay, now she's listening. And now we're going to set it up. Boom, boom, boom. And I found myself in Peruvian shamanic training because of a stone person, stone who told me, showed me who I was. Despite my being scared to death, I didn't want to study shamanism, except I discovered that I had been shamanic all my life. You know, I just wasn't accepting who I was. So I'm in training. We've set up the ceremony. The ceremony is 1 week after this particular weekend. And as I'm in this shamanic training for the first part of what became my ultimate path to become a mesa carrier in the Peruvian shamanic tradition, they taught us how to do fire ceremony. And then they said, and you need to practice this before we get together the next time. And, you know, they shouldn't be public ceremonies. And I'm like, oh man, I'm already breaking the rules. I've got like people coming next weekend and I know this is how we're supposed to do the ceremony. So that was the start of my somewhat one unusual aspect of what I do, which is to bring people to the zoo in ceremony with the zoo animal ambassadors. And sorry, it's emotional because they all just connected with me right now. Hey guys, gotta tone it down just a little bit. I need to talk. It's challenging for them right now because we are in lockdown. People have been shut other than the people who care for the animal ambassadors there. That was traumatic for me. I had to do a lot of clearing work. But we had a ceremony last night with them. Normally I'm doing Every year I bring people in ceremony to the four different zoos that are in this area and collect the prayers of the animals, bring them to ceremony because, again, the information I got was we need to bring the two together in ceremony because when we blend the prayers of the people with the prayers of the animals, then together we can co-create a different and more sustainable way of walking upon the earth. And so we got, this is something that takes place every month from December on, and Woodland Park Zoo here in Seattle was the last one this month. And of course we couldn't go there physically, but the animals still wanted to do this. So we had ceremony last night, virtually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of what I do is virtual, but this time is the first time that we've never actually had the initial physical contact with them before doing the rest. And they were very clear that they, you know, they miss us. They appreciate us. They don't want us to forget them. And so Rain, this is Rain. I can't tell. Here we go. He's now in spirit. He's been in spirit for a number of years, but he was one of my first teachers.
Was he the one you connected with?
Yes. Yeah.
Through the class?
Yeah. Yeah. Rain the Jaguar at the Philadelphia Zoo.
Oh, beautiful.
And they called him Jake, I found out later. Oh. But he preferred the name Rain for his ceremonial name, I guess. So he brought my awareness up, but they weren't done with me yet. And they're still not done with me. I mean, I learn things all the time. Every time I guess I don't think I've ever reached the pinnacle of, like, I know everything there is to know about this. Hopefully I never reach that pinnacle. I don't want to fall into ego, but they'll peel another layer and I'll go, oh my God, there's so much more. I need to do work on myself so that I can open myself up more, you know? So I reached kind of a point in my life where I realized I had taken the wrong path and I needed to really focus on these connections with the animals and these ceremonies with the animals. And I said to my, to the universe, to my guides, to put it out there, basically, okay, if you guys really want me to do this, if this is what you really want, you have to find me a place where I can bring the people and the animals together in ceremony. I mean, the zoos are great and I will continue to do that, but it's not like we can spend all day and all night there and have fire on the grounds of the zoo, at least not yet. And so I received a call from someone that was had taken some classes with me. And she said, I'm on my way back from this amazing place in Driggs, Idaho. It's called Earth Fire Institute. She said, you have to be at this place. And she didn't know what I'd put out there. And I looked them up and I went, oh my God. And something happened and I forgot about it for 2 weeks. And then somebody else shot me this link to this video called Energy Healing Wolf. And the hairs on the back of my neck literally stood up when I watched it. And I was like, oh my God, that's the place. So they'd only just like set up their website. And I had trouble connecting with them. But when I finally connected with Susan Eyrick and told her what I did, we spent like an hour on the phone because even though she comes from a biologist background, she's trying to get the voices of the animals out as well. So we had a common meeting ground. And my guide said, go. And so in 2.5 months, which is like unheard of, I ended up setting up this event. I've never set up an event before like that. And we show up, you know, at Earthfire with like 15 people, I think it was, and had just the most incredible time there because the animals are very special at Earthfire Institute. The way that Susan Eyrick and John Simpson interact with them is as sentient beings, as emotional beings. And so they were already inclined to, you know, meet with us. And I had just some of the most amazing experiences there. I mean, I had an incredible connection with a wolf named Cucumber, who you haven't lived till you're sitting in a yurt and all of a sudden a wolf walks in. You know? And it's like completely, totally unexpected. I'm talking to Pete and all of a sudden comes Cucumber, the timber wolf, by herself. Okay? She's not, you know, on a chain, a leash, nothing. And, you know, she was, she came in with her tail down and tucked. So I said, okay, everybody, because we're all like, I mean, a wolf's just walked in. You're like, yeah. Whoa, you know, excited, you know.
They're pretty big too.
Calm down.
Yeah.
You know, to ground, take a deep breath, you know, because she feels our energy. And she just, you could see her relax and you could see her tail and she regained her confidence. And then she started to go around the room and she sniffed the toes of everybody. That's how she greeted them. And then she came to me and she stopped and she stood in front of me. She raised her head and she looked me straight in the eyes. And I'm, once again, I'm staring in the eyes of a wild animal, which, you know, I know I'm not supposed to do, but in that moment, it was exactly, I knew it was exactly the right thing to do. And her eyes were soft and inviting. And she said to me, I want to be the best ambassador I can be. And sorry, it's just, every time that moment is still very present. She is still very present. And I couldn't help myself. I reached out and I put my hand on the side of her face. I mean, okay, I would never do that ordinarily to an animal that I didn't know. The face is a very vulnerable area for them. And she stood totally still and I'm touching her and I'm looking into her eyes and I said, I made her a promise. I said, I will do everything I can, you know, for the animals, to bring the people. And there's a photo of it. We call it the connection.
Wow.
And that was just an extremely powerful moment. Cucumber was very powerful. She's also now in spirit. And we didn't know, I didn't find this out till later. She had walked over Jean. She didn't just appear magically by herself. Jean had walked her over.
Okay.
And on the way, he explained to her that she was going to be an ambassador for all of the animals there. I didn't know she'd never been in the yurt before.
Wow.
She'd never walked up steps. She brought herself in to this work. To meet us. She surrendered herself to that connection.
That's amazing.
She didn't start out that way from all the stories I've had about her from Susan and John. She didn't start out. She had a near-death experience. It's more Susan's story to tell, but she was not, you know, spiritual or very relaxed, but she started after the near-death experience and they're, you know, caring for her around the clock. She joined them in their meditations, you know, so she discovered her purpose, I guess you could say.
Right.
And that brings me to Windwalker. Windwalker also lived at Earth Fire Institute, and he was a mountain lion. He's now in spirit. And Windwalker was, I met him in 2010, which is when the first ceremonies took place. It's now going to be, this is going to be our 10th year this year there.
And I'm coming.
I know.
Can't wait.
It'll be so fun. So, you know, during that time we had many powerful experiences, including that encounter with Cucumber. But it wasn't until after the event ended and I spent some time doing some private healing sessions with some of the animals that I had a different connection with Windwalker. He was present for the first ceremonies, but I had this sudden experience with him. He had asked me to Reiki attune him. And so I'm doing the attunement process for him because, of course, that helps to connect him more strongly. For those of you who might not know, you know, a Reiki attunement is for the purpose, generally speaking, of people, for training, because it helps to connect you with the universal life force energy so that then you can, you know, facilitate that healing energy for yourself and for others. It also has a huge potential for transformation from a spiritual growth standpoint. And that was, Windwalker had already had encounters with other people where he suddenly recognized that he had a purpose and a meaning for being here. I didn't know any of that up until that point. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the attunement process with him, and all of a sudden I realized that he is a master teacher. I don't know how I knew that, but I did. And
this is the cougar.
Yes.
Mountain lion. Yeah.
Yep. And I talked to Susan afterwards. And she said, oh, it's funny you should say that, because several other animal communicator, teacher people have said the same thing. And she said, I'm like, what? Him? Because he was apparently not a very nice mountain lion up until he discovered that he could do something here. The people could hear him and would listen to him. And so that summer, after I left being there, he stayed connected with me and we would talk. And one day I was walking, talking to him, and he said, you must help me, keep me alive. And I said, I'm not God. I knew he was not well. I had heard that he was unwell.
Okay.
I said, you know, I don't have control over that, but I'll do whatever I can. And so I began to do healing sessions with him. And in those healing sessions, I got the guidance to do, it's a practice called, you know, the death rites in Peruvian shamanism. And I'd been taught to do it, how to do it, but for people, you know? And I was like, I had to check and double check with my guides, because it's like, you know, am I going to be breaking the rules, you know? And I said, no, do this. So I ended up, you know, working with Choco Chinchai, the archetypal jaguar, the rainbow jaguar. And she took his spirit out, took it on a journey through the universe, and then spat it back out. And, you know, I put it back in. And it's to help the people, usually, to step beyond the death that is stalking them. It's a huge transformational process. And I had no idea what was going to happen. And as Choco Chinchai is walking away, and for archetypal jaguar, think jaguar the size of of city buildings.
Oh, wow.
Not physical jaguar size, yeah. Big archetype. Yeah. And he's walking away, I said, is Windwalker going to die? And she said, yes, but not now. And he rallied. And when we went to meet him, he was, for the event that year, he was unable to walk.
Oh.
But he was alert. And when the people arrived, I got the guidance to basically build the event around him.
Mm-hmm.
this was his moment to shine mm-hmm. and to do his work. And so Jean invited us to all of us to step into Windwalker's bedroom. And, you know, it's like, okay, I know he can't walk, but, you know, this is the first time in my life I've ever been, you know, physically in the presence, no barriers, you know, with a mountain lion. And I didn't feel scary. I mean, it was the energy, the open sacred space, and Windwalker, because he was relaxed. Mm-hmm. So we all line up against the wall, you know, like boom, 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 because it's more of a rectangular space than anything else. So we're in line, basically, and Windwalker is across from us with Jean standing next to him. And Windwalker looks at the first person in line and looks straight in their eyes and greets them. And then he does this to the next person and the next person and on down the line. And then when he's finished greeting everybody, he takes this massive paw and he goes. And John says, and he's looking at the first person in line, and John says, he wants you to go forward. So first person in line, Debbie, bless her heart, she kneels in front of him and he looks into her eyes. And what he did was he showed her who she was on a soul level. And then she got up and he looks at the next person in line, and each of us knelt in front of him. And, you know, it was a powerful experience for people. And I got the guidance to take them on a shamanic journey later so that they could get more information about what he kind of downloaded to them. Mm-hmm. But I kneel in front of him and I'm hoping for this beautiful spiritual message. And he looks in my eyes and he goes, you need to stop wanting to have the experiences. You need to be a leader. And I was like, oh God, I have so much work in front of me, because I'm not naturally a leader person. It's not, I'm a follower, but I'm a shy, more Capricorn behind the scenes kind of person. It's like, you know, up front, out on center stage, it's not really my thing. So yeah, he gave me my marching orders in gruff mountain lion fashion. And I did also take the opportunity, though, to, when I greeted him, we had had these interactions all summer long. And I thought, what does my half bobcat cougar like the most? He loves it when I scritch the sides of his face. Mm-hmm. So I reached out slowly so that he knew I was coming. And I just, wow.
Oh, my
God. Wow. God. Yeah. He was magnificent. Such strength. And he wanted to spend time with us. And we ended up being able to put him in the wheelchair. And slowly he walked out with us to part of the grassy area where we kind of set up for the afternoon. And he sat with us. He got several of the people that were there sponge bathed him to make him more comfortable. And he was just so happy because, of course, he was with Jean and purring. And I'm filming some of this. You know, I'm trying to be the leader and let everybody else have the experiences, you know. And he looks straight in the lens and he says, are you getting this? And I said, yes. He said, good, because I don't want him to ever forget, meaning Jean, you know, what we've meant to each other.
That's amazing.
And when we left him for the day, as we walked out of the enclosure, it had been cloudy. And all of a sudden, behind him, a rainbow. Chokichinchai, rainbow jaguar. So, you know, these are some of my greatest teachers. But there are many out there, you know, that serve in different ways. They are conscious. They're not all spiritual any more than all people are spiritual.
Right, right.
there's those that are called to something more or want to be something more. You know, I suppose there's beer drinking crows, just like there are, you know, yogi crows.
Yeah.
But yeah, when we meet with them from an energetic place, because we're all energy, when we meet where there's common ground and shared purpose, you know, that's where the miracles can happen. And that's where they want us to be. And I just want to kind of conclude with, after Windwalker crossed over into spirit, if it's okay, I'd like to read his message.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm going to need my glasses for that. So I'll just preface this by saying, when we left that event, Windwalker had not been able to walk, but had been gaining strength in that energy. Mm-hmm. When Debbie and I went to visit him last before hitting the road to come back to Seattle, excuse me, he actually rose to his feet and made his way to his water. Didn't look at us, but he basically said, "This is how I want you to remember me."
Right, right.
Not weak. Strong inside. So he crossed over about a month and a half later after having shared with as many people, other people. He had said, "Bring the people, you know, before I leave." And he crossed over consciously, which kind of blew me away, because it said that that's what the medicine people can do.
Now, what does that mean?
He died sitting up, mm-hmm. looking up into the sky, and his mm-hmm. spirit just left his body.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Not sitting up, but, you know, upright.
Right, right.
Purring, because he had his eye on the where he was going.
That's so awesome. Oh, gosh.
So I had an interview scheduled, and I had told the person, you know, what had just recently transpired. And she said, you know, can you connect with him and see if he has a message?
Right.
So I said, yeah, I went on a shamanic journey to connect with him. And this is the message. This is the journey. So the journey began in a great meadow where all the animals were gathered. Windwalker sat in front, grooming. I greeted him. Windwalker turned and showed me a vast plain and only a few buffalo, encircled by a fence. On the other side of the fence, a man was crying. Windwalker told me that because of the separation that we had created between man and wildlife, both suffered. The bison had no freedom without, and man had no freedom within. I heard, what has been sundered must be made whole again, or all will die. I asked Windwalker what we must do to become whole again, and he put a paw across my shoulders. And together we looked out across the land. He said, we must work together. I looked at him and asked, you and I? He laughed and with a rough lick to my face rumbled, I meant people and animals, but yes, we still have work to do together, you and I. What must the people do? I asked. And he showed me a view inside a person from heart to belly. Inside that person, I saw a landscape where birds sang and plants grew. And as I watched, the tendrils grew until they were outside the person and reached towards other people, each with their own gardens. Each person must cultivate a garden within themselves, he said. And when they do, we, the animals, birds, plants, fish, will reach back to them. Together, we are strong. Together, we can heal ourselves and this world. And he showed me each person tending their inner garden, healing themselves by removing weeds of anger, pain, loss, planting seeds of empathy and compassion, in fertile soil nurtured with love and organic nutrients. The scene changed, and all was dark around me. Windwalker was to my right, and I realized that we were swimming deep in an ocean. He was searching for someone or something, leaving me alone, and then returning. Out of the darkness, a large eye appeared, and as we surfaced, I saw Windwalker riding the back of a great whale. Whale showed me the vast oceans, and instead of seeing living animals, I saw marine fossils from long ago. Then I saw great bleached bones on the shores of the land. Whale was showing me how long he had existed and the rise and fall of species he had seen, the mass extinctions. And he made it clear that we were facing another such time right now. And then a great wind reached down and picked Windwalker and I up, spiraling into the clouds. And as I watched Windwalker riding the winds, I realized how he got his name. He told me we were going to speak to the winds. I was not sure about this. What would I say? Around us gathered storm clouds, gentle breezes, and all the weather patterns in between. Windwalker and I were in the center of this amazing gathering. And with speech that I felt rather than heard, the Wairas, the wind people, communicated that weather patterns were changing. I was shown buffeting winds and smoke rising everywhere, which I took to be carbon dioxide and pollution. Then they showed me each person planting a tree. Their suggestion helped bring things back into balance. They also showed me an image of many feet walking and more closely knit and smaller communities within cities. The Wairas told me that they did not want to treat the earth and the people roughly, but the balance had been upset, and without our help, it could not be restored. They also mentioned ceremony, showing me offerings being made. It was suggested that we had forgotten gratitude for the natural elements, and that had made a difference also. And then the Wairas showed me all of them holding hands, and those hands extended to the people and the animals. And they showed me the heavens and the hands extending from the stars towards us. All is connected, they said. What affects one affects all, but it also means that you have our support. It is time to recall what has been forgotten. Tears were streaming down my face, and I hugged Windwalker, overcome with awe and gratitude for what I was being shown. I thanked him, the Wairas, the stars, and Whale. And with my journey ended, I returned. And this was 2011.
That's pretty profound, prophetic, incredibly beautiful.
Yeah, he's something. So I have hope because I felt things were changing before the current crisis. In which Pimpernel still says in every situation there's an opportunity. But I also feel greater hope right now because we are being forced to sit in what we have created and contemplate it. And we can hit the reset button. When we come out of this, we will be changed. And we can change. We will be changed. We are already changed. Things are going to be changed because of this. They're already changed. But greater change we can consciously create, and we need to. And I believe, the animals believe in us. You know, they appreciate us. They don't want to see us fail. They want a restoration of balance, and we are part of that web of life. So all we have to do is listen, reach out to them and put them first. Susan Eyrich, in a very wonderful video that she did for Earthfire Institute called Emissaries from the Wild. See if I get the quote right. What if instead of trying to save the earth, we loved the earth? Mm-hmm. And in doing so, saved it. It's not about saving things. It's about embracing our connections to the people and to the animals and to all our relations.
Yes, and that's very doable.
It is.
It's very...
done in simple ways.
Yes.
In your backyard.
Yes.
I mean, it's great to do grand things. We need them. Mm-hmm. But everybody can shift. It only takes a shift in perception.
Yeah. Yes.
Suddenly go and to realize, for example, that those sparrows and other birds at your bird feeder, mm-hmm. they know who you are.
Yeah.
They recognize you.
Yeah,
may not be able to tell them individually apart, but they can recognize me. They are my neighbors.
That's right. Yeah.
And they know everything that's going on in the neighborhood.
It's so true. And I love that about the doing it through love, because when you think about saving the planet, it's such an overwhelming thought. But if you look at it from the point of view of just loving everything, loving your neighbors, loving the animals, loving...
If every action you take comes from a place of grounded, balanced, and centered love, mm-hmm. then it's right action.
Yes, yes.
It's right relationship. It's heart to heart.
I love that. Because we can all do that. We can all handle that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can get a critical mass.
The 100th month, like where enough people create that. And I feel that shift is happening now.
I agree. And I do believe that the young people coming in are, they are not going to tolerate the way things have been done in the past.
And they shouldn't. They're the ones who are going to inherit the mess that our generations have created.
But I think they're just going to be a critical component of moving us forward. And we have to be the foundation for them to stand on to help get it done. Well, your stories were beautiful. Yeah, I really would like everybody to take away from this that there's more to the animals than what you see on the outside.
Yep.
And if you open your heart to that, you will be able to connect to it and see it for yourself.
African elephant Watoto, who used to, well, she's now in spirit as well. She used to live at the Woodland Park Zoo. But she told me, she said, speaking of the animals, she said, if you call us, we will come. But if we come, you must listen.
Yes. It's incredible. Yeah. The wisdom is, there's no end to it.
We are blessed. Yeah. I mean, we are. I know it's shamanism is about all things being connected, but if you think about it purely from a scientific standpoint, each of us shares the same building materials. We are all part of Pachamama or Mother Earth. They are our relatives.
Yes, yes.
The stone people, the plant people, tree people, animal people, creepy crawlies, mm-hmm. winged ones, you know, everybody.
And science is catching up with that a little bit with quantum physics, so...
Yes, they're finally starting to wrap something around which shamans have been practicing for thousands of years.
Yes, yes, yes. It's so true. It's like, catch up to the mystical science. You can do it. You're slowly chugging along, but really to get...
Well, I admire it because they're trying to quantify something, which is extremely hard to quantify.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't try to wrap my head around it. I just go, okay.
Yeah.
This is what we know and I accept. That's the guidance I got. Here we go.
Right. Well, it's amazing. And I love the work that you're doing. And
thank you.
I just encourage everybody to connect with you. Tell us your website.
So you can find me at ReikiShamanic.com or look up Rose Dedan.
And I know you have some great courses. You have a beautiful newsletter. I did your Animal Ambassador course, which I absolutely loved. And I can't wait to go to the Earth Fire Institute in September. It's just been a joy hearing your stories. And I appreciate your taking the time to be part of this retreat.
Thank you. And I don't know how long it's going to continue, but I'm letting people know if it's okay that I'm doing daily mm-hmm. Facebook broadcasts And of course, Facebook archives them. So the first three or four that I've done are the most important ones, my guides say, and it's for how people can, it's to help people cope with challenging times, basically. It's Reiki shamanic tips with the help of my allies. So.
And do they find that by going to Rose Dedan on Facebook?
Actually, it would be Wild Reiki Shaman on Facebook.
Okay. Okay. So. Yeah, I'd like to check that out as well. Now, is there, do you have a gift that you're giving?
But let's see. At the moment, I'm offering people my, and I know you mean through you, but at the, I also have Reiki shamanic storytelling that's being offered as a gift. It's all to help people with the, you know, how we're all sheltering in. But I do have the gift of a story from my book, Tales of a Healer, Animals, Reiki, and Shamanism, which would be the gift.
That's great.
Gift link.
Thank you so much for that.
It's a story of animal communication before I knew I was an animal communicator.
I love that because that's really real. You know, that's when you're...
Everybody can do this.
Yeah, yeah.
We've just forgotten. We could do it as kids.
I know. That's the thing. Yeah. If everybody thinks back to when they were young and the experiences they had with their animal companions or with, you know, just being outside playing around, coming across a squirrel or a bird and thinking about, yeah, like what was your reaction? Because usually kids stop and talk to the animals.
Right.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the natural inclination that we lose as we're sort of
told you can't
conventionalized. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Rose, I will let you go. I know you have things to do and I just so, so appreciate your coming.
I am grateful. Thank you for helping to get the messages that the animals so desperately want to get to us out via this wonderful event that you've organized.
Yeah. Well, I hope it resonates with a lot of people and helps people think about things they might not normally think about.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Thank you.
Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Hello Animal Talks, hosted by me, Jenny Worthington, production by Stacy Spencer of Going Graphic, sound engineered by Jimmy Richards of Bay Central Media, and music written and performed by Jake Shepard.